This weekend marks the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, when civil rights marchers were set upon by Alabama State Police troopers and a sheriff's posse as they tried to march from Selma to Montgomery. The catalyst for these marches was the shooting death and funeral of activist Jimmie Lee Jackson. I sat down and had a conversation with Vera Jenkins Booker, the nurse who tended to Jackson the night he was brought in to the Good Samaritan Hospital in Selma 50 years ago. Now, I understand that you were the nurse that tended to him when he was brought into the hospital, is that right?
Yes, I was a nurse on duty on February the 18th, 1965. And as of last Wednesday, the 18th, it was 50 years ago.
What was going on that night?
Well, I had gone to work. I worked 11 to 7. I was 11 to 7 supervisor at the Good Samaritan Hospital at that time. And I had gotten to work. I always would get to work on time, never late. And had gotten them a report, and had gotten started to get ready to kind of get around and make rounds. And I got a call saying that they were bringing a young man from there, and they had gotten shot. And they had been to a mass meeting. I found out all that when they got there, but I knew they were having a mass meeting in Marion at one of the churches. I didn't know the church or anything. And a few minutes, maybe, if I'm not mistaken, it was probably about 11:20 or so, they brought him in. And I always thought the ambulance brought him in, but they brought him on in, put him in the emergency room, and I came on down, and we had stalls in the emergency room at that time, four of them, and he was in the second one. It was empty at that time, and they put him in there and put him on our table, and he was in so much pain too, kind of grunting, all bent over, like, when I got him up on the table, stretched him out. And when I got in there, I said to him, I said, well, you're going to be all right. I just really, really felt like Jimmie Lee would be all right. I don't know. And I think about that now when I'm talking about it. And back then too, and he was a handsome young man, 26 years old, and just looked good and all, but I pulled up his shirt, had on his shirt, pulled that up, and there on the left side of him was a mass of intestines that was out where the hole was where he had gotten shot. And he told me, and I said, what? He said, I went in the cafe to check on my mother, who had gone to the meeting, and my granddad. Granddad is old, and I went in to check on him. And when I went in, he said, it was just chaos. And he said, state trooper shot me. I said, shot? He said, yeah. He said, I wasn't doing anything. I just was trying to find out where. I knew they were at the church, and everybody from the church had been running, trying to take cover or whatever, because evidently the state troopers had gotten at them, and they went into the cafe in Marion, his cafe. And he said, when I went in, he had a laceration also on the back of his head, about 2 inches long. That's in my nurse's notes. I still have a copy of that I did get. And that's in the museum here in Selma. The Good Samaritan log 50 years ago is in my nurse's notes, so in that log, in the book, rather. It was a little log thing. And he said, and I attended to that because he was bleeding a little bit. It wasn't much blood on the intestines thing. It was kind of dry like by that time, maybe from his shirt and all. And so I got some sterile saline, which is salt water, a bottle of it, and took a 4x4 gauze and just drenched it in that. And also, when I done that, I got a 4x4, and then I got an ABD pad, which is a little bigger than that. It's a little wider and a little, and wet it real good. I wet it and put it over it, made him flinch like it was kind of cold, like in February too. The water was kind of, the solution was kind of cold. And I just assured him, I took his vital signs and all, that I don't have that on the nurse's note. And I called Dr. Dinkins. Dr. Dinkins William Deacon was the black doctor in Selma. And, of course, at that time, we were segregated, you would know. And I called Dr. Deacon. Dr. Deacon came in to attend Jimmy Lee. But when he got there, Dr. Deacon looked at it and asked me to give him something for pain. And I gave Jimmy Lee a fourth grain of morphine and mixed it with atropine, which was 1/150 of a grain, gave it to him. And he kind of calmed him down, you know. He just calmed him down. Well, during that time, waiting on Dr. wasn't too far long because he didn't live too far from the hospital. We were talking, and I was just really, really assuring him. And just, you know, all he told me that he was home on furlough. And he said to me that he was a deacon of his little church in Marion. And I just complimented him for it. And he was in the service. He was in the army, and he had come home on furlough. And then he had a little girl, and obviously he said 4 years old. And I said, what? And I said, man, I said, I got a little girl that age. My baby's that age. My oldest is that age. And at that time, I had 2 children, a boy and a girl. And he said, yes, ma'am. And I said, don't worry about it. You're going to be all right. And you, he said, but when I come back again, I'm going to get married to a mother. And I said, well, you do that. You do that. That's what you need to do, is to marry your baby's mother. And he was just, oh, you know. So they took him to orderly. We had orderly. And he took him to x-ray. And Dr. Deacon came in, examined, told Dr. Deacon the same thing that he had told me. And Dr. Deacon took him to, sent him to x-ray. And they, in my notes, they got an upright, which is with him, trying to hold him up or sit him up like. And also one flat on the stretcher, which was the abdomen, of the abdomen. They took x-ray. And he had surgery that night, Jimmy Lee did. And Dr. Deacon operated on Jimmy Lee. And the next day, which is on a Thursday night, I was always off on a Friday and Saturday night and go back on a Sunday. So I was off that Saturday. So by early morning, it kind of was drowsy. I told him, I'd see you Sunday night. Now you take care. I just knew he'd be all right. It seemed like he was doing pretty good. So I was on Friday night and Saturday night. Sunday night, I went back. When I got there on Sunday night, he was asleep. And he said to me, well, he had kind of a rough day, but it wasn't bad, still in a lot of pain, and I'm probably sure he was. And after that, and when he did awake, I'd make rounds all night going around through the hospital, and I just had kind of wanted to make sure I checked on him again. I went back down till he was on third floor, and he was awake, and I talked to him a little bit and all, and he said his mother and all of them had been, everybody, Mary and his mama and all of them had been checking on him, and the girlfriend, too, and all of them, I think, been checking on him. And so, but I didn't see them. I didn't ever see them because I wasn't there during the day. And I told him, I said, you're still going to just hang on in there. You're going to be fine, Jimmy. And it was just, and then on Tuesday night, that was Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night he was getting, just looked like getting worse. You know, he wasn't. He was there. He was kind of drowsy, but sleeping, and had a temperature, and starting into getting infected. Well, they say infections, but anyway, now. They operated on him again, and he died. Like you said earlier, it's been 50 years. And he lived about 8 days, and he passed away. And it really bothered me because I was just so sure that he'd be all right, and I had assured him that up until the end, that you're gonna be all right. Kind of bothered me, but I couldn't do anything about it or anything. And I went to his funeral, the one they had here in Selma. They had it at Brown Chapel Church, and Dr. L.L. Anderson attended. He's gone now, the late Dr. L.L. Anderson, which was a pastor of Tabernacle. And at that time, Brown Chapel, Tabernacle, and First Baptist were having the mass meetings here in Selma. And I knew Dr. Anderson, too, and he attended, and it was people everywhere. Now, they recorded it. I was thinking it was NBC, but I'm not sure. And I stopped and talked to his mother. I had talked to his mother by phone. I had not talked to her in person, And I called her, after the funeral and talked to her once. In 18, it's kind of a bad day for me. I don't know why. Maybe because I've been talking about it a lot, saying I've just been talking about it. And I just think it was that. But it was just like I replayed the whole thing all over again of that night 50 years ago. And at that time, I was 29 years old. 28 and 29, and I would have been 29 in September. And if I lived to see 13th of September this year, I would be 79 years old. But I can remember that February 18, 1965, like it happened on yesterday.
Did you have any idea how much of an impact his death would have on the civil rights, on the movement that was going on at the time?
You know, I didn't, and I'm going to share this with you. I did. Yes and no. I'm going to say yes and no. Had no idea that it would lead to the Selma Montgomery March, in which they tried, you know, for three times before they could really get to do it. My husband was teaching here, and he marched the third time. He didn't march that day, on the Bloody Sunday. It was amazing, and how people were there that evening, and after that Bloody Sunday, and it was their arms bleeding and lacerations on the head, like, you know, and all, where they had fallen and all, and maybe. And my thing, when they called me to come in, I remember asking the sisters, did anybody die, you know, get killed? And I'm really worried about that, because by the bridge, I just knew somebody probably pushed somebody over in, you know. But thank God it wasn't. But I never knew, but what Dr. King stood for how he was, and knowing him, for what he meant for it, and then he lost his life, as you know, from it. I really feel like it really brought rise to a lot of things that we were not thinking it would.
I understand that you also testified in the case against James Bernard Fowler, the trooper.
I did, and I went to Marion, Alabama. I know the DA very well, DA Michael Jackson, and I think DA told me, Mr. Dunn told me he was 4 or 5 years old when this happened. He was young, too. And when he became DA of the counties, which we include in Dallas, he had been looking for someone that was there. You know what I mean? Like you said, I was there. And I went to see him one day. He was so glad to see me, and I came on in and rolled on in my wheelchair. I said, I came to talk to you. And he said, well, and I knew that he was trying to find somebody that was there, because he was trying his best to get him indicted for the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson. And I asked him, I said, you know what? You wouldn't guess who, he knew I was a nurse. He already knew that, knew I was retired now. I said, I hear that you're trying to find someone that was there with Jimmie Lee Jackson. Well, I treated him. He looked at me, cute and smiled. He said, yeah. I said, you know what? You're looking at the lady that was there when they brought him in for Marion that night, February 18th, 1965, shot on the right side, and he had intestines about the size of a small grapefruit sticking out of the hole. And he just went back in his chair. What? I said, yes. And he said, will you testify about it? I said, well, yeah, I remember it real well. And he said, you know, you wouldn't believe, a few minutes ago, he told me maybe 20 or 30 minutes he had been on, and I think he told me that the FBI, if it wasn't FBI, was trying to find out. And he said, here you would come. I said, yeah, I guess the Lord sent me. We kind of laughed it off. And I explained to him what was what, just like I did a few minutes ago. And he said, will you testify? I said, yes, I will. So we got ready. And he called me and told me when it was going to be. My husband carried me to Marion. It was on a Wednesday, I believe, and in June. And when we got there, and we got down to Marion, the old big courthouse in the center, and I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't get upstairs. There are no elevators there. He brought the grand jury from upstairs downstairs to where I was. And I went and testified to those people, the whole story like I just told you. And I came out in the hall, and when I came out in the hall, this young man from Birmingham came to me and said to me, he said, I've never seen anybody, and I'm going to say this to you, Miss Booker, that could remember at this age like you did that. See, you went through that so fast, you scared me. And I said, well, it was one of the things in my life as a nurse. I guess I remember a lot of things, you know, but it was something that touched me. And so much happened, like you said a few minutes ago, out of that. And it's important. But that was why, and he was indicted, as you know, for 6 months. And there were some people around and around kind of fussed that. He didn't get long enough. But you know what? I felt like it was a closure for a lot of us, and especially for his mother's gone on and his granddad and all, but the daughter. So, and I never felt any way that I done wrong, but I did feel like it really was a lift of burdens for many people.
Keep an eye on APR.org for more stories about the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday and all of our civil rights coverage from Alabama Public Radio.